And good evening. It's Intuitive Soul Radio. We have a new show starting tonight, which is Global Awakening with our co-host, Stephen D'Amico. So welcome, Stephen.
Thank you. Glad to be here. And thanks so much for inviting me to do this show. I'm really looking forward to how it evolves.
Me too. I think it'll be very fascinating. Sorry, I'm looking at my my encoding because this is a brand new system and I want to make sure that that everything works perfectly. And it does seem to be working. So we're good. We're good. We're good. So Stephen, Global Awakening, let's start there, what that means. Now, you also have written a book called Heaven on Earth, The Guide to Enlightenment and Human Unity. I like that. So we may go back into that as well and talk a little bit about, you know, some of the concepts you brought up. But Global Awakening, what does it mean to you?
Global Awakening is a potential for humanity to awaken to its true nature on a collective scale. So, you know, throughout the ages, there have been spiritual realizers who have discovered the absolute truth and have done their darndest to communicate what that means in terms of existence and what's the point of it all. And the potential for global awakening, for anybody that's sort of plugged into spirituality in the contemporary world, it really represents the possibility that that same realization that saints, sages, realizers of the past have awoken to, that potential could emerge in a collective way. And I have in my experience teaching, have noticed that there seems to be an emerging potential for more people to awaken with a little bit of direction, a little bit of, you know, pointing instructions to the essence or the truth of who we really are, spiritual or formless beings. So it seems to be that there's the time is ripe. Whether or not there, you know, we'll reach a tipping point, I think is what global awakening in action is, the genesis behind that idea, is to help push that forward.
Right. And certainly that has been a concept that has been around for quite a while. And they've been talking about, you know, 2012 being, you know, the pinnacle point. And I'm not really sure whether, you know, 2012 is going to be any different than the year 2000 in our, you know, our fears and our hopes of, you know, what's going to happen in the future. I think, you know, they're certainly in alignment with, astrologically, and some, you know, very unique things are happening around that time and have been happening, which have, you know, certainly almost felt like a pressure to get through your stuff. And I think those people that are getting closer, you know, have been on this path for a while, seem to have had that pressure being pushed. Now, you yourself are kind of one of the lucky ones because you've kind of already gone through a process of your own self-realization. And so you're really here to assist us to get there. But you've already done your work, even though your work is not just your own personal journey, but to assist the masses as well. You've kind of done your personal journey. And so now it's really about, you know, this global awakening and how we can assist that. And I think there are a lot of people, which is one of the reasons I want to do this show. I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there that we're all trying desperately to, that it's part of our own soul purpose to assist in this evolutionary process and this kind of unity consciousness that is clearly happening on the planet. And we all have that journey, but some of us also have our own personal journey that we have to work through. And you've sort of been allowed the grace of having that happen early in life.
Yeah, I'll qualify that though by saying that I'm in no way a perfected being or that my stuff is done. I think
fair enough.
I mean, there's two aspects to what self-realization means. There's the awakening to the ground of one's being, which is a dimension, a formless dimension, and recognizing that ultimately who you are and who we all are at the deepest level is the source of existence itself, that we all have emerged out of that and that our deepest sense of self really emerges from that, beyond all the other layers that create the stuff that distract us from that realization. Having said that, there is still the personal dimension, which I talk about quite a bit as an ongoing evolutionary process. I mean, certainly you can make significant strides in your own inner work and the cleansing process that we hear so much about, but enlightenment is not about, you know,
getting there and it being done.
Yeah, it's more like learning how to do it better, learning right. how to do it with more wisdom and compassion, and understanding that the process is that there's a part of us, that an active part of us, the part of us that evolves in time, which until we really get in touch with that, is in spiritual literature is called the ego. It's the thing that was blocking us all the time. But after any kind of significant awakening or level of self-realization, the one's relationship to that evolving part, it's something that you engage more actively. So you're not resisting the ego or the self that evolves through time. So I would say that prior to any kind of significant shift, that aspect of our being, the part of us that is personal, that has a life, that does engage other people, can be fairly static, because we're so often resisting the process of growing and just repeating the same experiences over and over again that are generated by the conditioning from our upbringing. But once we understand that that's what's going on, and we make this kind of significant shift in our understanding of who we are, that we're not only just that, but that we're something much deeper, that opens up all kinds of new energies and potentials to engage that process in a much more active way. And so the personal self begins to evolve, and that evolution can become accelerated. I think in our previous show, we talked about some of the higher potentials that can emerge as well. When we understand that there is a part of us that is evolving in time, who we are ultimately is beyond time.
Mm-hmm.
But that timeless dimension is also coming through each one of us in a very personal way.
Mm-hmm.
And the legacy of our lives is really a testament to how much we've been in touch with the timeless essence of who we are, and how we've allowed the qualities of that formless dimension to inform how we live our lives.
Right.
How that comes through is, you know, more of an appreciation for truth, for integrity, for love, for compassion, for wisdom, that we become in a sense interested in manifesting those qualities as opposed to the qualities of our lower nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, David Hawkins, in his series of books, talks about the different levels of enlightenment and how there clearly are, you know, levels that we achieve, and you know, some of them will be far beyond this dimensional planet, where if we get to that level, we wouldn't be coming back to a planet such as this. But you know, I also did an interview, you know, I've done a couple interviews with Thomas Campbell, who's a nuclear physicist, who talks about the fact that, you know, this is still pretty much infantary like planet. We're still very much in the, you know, the very beginning stages of evolution. And, you know, as much as there are people out there on the new age spectrum that, you know, try to make us feel that we're so incredibly evolved, or they're so incredibly evolved. It's a very interesting process that we all have to go through, and the different ways that we can achieve this. And, you know, the integrity and the discernment that we have to be able to work through the teachers that come into our lives and our own personal growth and development, so that we, you know, we're not giving away our power, which there's a lot of people out there that, you know, on this path, and especially in the new age and even not in the new age, that, you know, are taking our power and using that for their own benefit. And it becomes this very interesting dance where we obviously clearly chose for those people to be part of this, our own understanding and our own development. But we have to get to that place where we can say, you know, who it is that we need, and whether it's our own evolution, our own soul that we get our teachings from, or whether it is, you know, in the presence of somebody who's already there that will allow us to get there as well. I mean, it's a very interesting dance that we're in right now.
Yeah, well, there's the what I would call the transcendent teachers, which I think you're describing, you know, having any kind of interaction with a teacher who's what I would call a transcender, and also the idea which you touched on about Earth and humanity sort of being in the beginning stages of an evolutionary process. Just to answer the one's interaction with a transcendent teacher, I think those are the teachers that have realized that beyond form is a formless dimension, which is the source of one's identity. And that usually is translated as I am-ness. So one awakens to the I am-ness. What can happen, and what often happens for people who awaken to that level of realization, is they become too identified with the I am-ness. Right. And so when they end up teaching, part of what they're looking for is for everyone else to recognize that they're the I am-ness, as opposed to the other way around, which is the function and role of the teacher is to get you to realize that that's what you are. Right. And it's also so important to realize that that's only half the equation. I mean, that's, if we just think that enlightenment is about getting beyond space and time to the formless dimension to recognize that ultimately we're spiritual beings, then what's the point of the physical?
Right.
And this this comes to us through the traditions as well. There are strains of the traditions that, you know, there's definitely a strain in Buddhism for sure, and Hinduism.
Well, even early Christianity, I'm reading the book Committed by Elizabeth Gilbert, and she was having this struggle with going through a marriage, as she'd had a terrible divorce and, you know, going through the second one, but being forced to do it through immigration laws. But anyway, she discovered that the earliest texts of Christianity were also certainly through the Catholic Church anyway, not so much, but then Protestant wasn't there.
Had the element of
the celibacy. Celibacy was mandatory in our lives, and this is the way, again, that the church was trying to control marriage, trying to actually eliminate marriage by keeping people apart, but then couldn't, so then they had to find a way to include it as part of it. But clearly in the beginning stages of it, celibacy was a huge aspect, which is why their priests are still forced to be celibate.
So I think they're maybe what inspired you to bring that up is this, you know, there's a potential confusion over understanding the non-dual nature of reality, which is basically that reality is co-emerging as formless and form, that they're not separate, and they've never been separate as evolution goes.
I know. I brought that up because we were talking about the physical, and to me the physical is always about, you know, full body presence and that energy that exists. So then I went right back to the marriage and was thinking about, yeah, sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
I'm glad you were able to follow that so well. But then it does bring back with Buddhism as well, like, because Buddha, you know, does talk about women being the one way that we're addicted, and clearly the whole physical aspect, that there was these parts of us that, you know, that they're trying to get us to transcend the physical body, and the beginnings of New Age movement. And I mean, it's always been about the heart and above, and not being in this grounded, centered space on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is not to suggest that celibacy or you know, certain practices might not serve one's spiritual growth or spiritual evolution. I mean, I was celibate for a number of years because it served me at that time to be celibate. But just in terms of understanding, you know, that transcendent quality, and how that can be misinterpreted on the path, so that we think that, or that there are teachings that come to us through traditions and through different teachers, that the idea is to somehow just get beyond the physical, that's liberation, is, you know, get out of the cycle of reincarnation and only abide in the formless and never incarnate. eventually, you know, even if one does that, God's like, all right, he'll give you a little nudge, go on back in there and fight the good fight. Because ultimately the purpose of existence, or at least, you know, one way of understanding the point of existence, is really for the formless to know itself in form.
Right.
Otherwise, why is there a physical universe?
Right.
And this is something that is not just an idea that I dreamed up. I thought it sounds really nice. This is something that one discovers as you go deeper into the dimensions of your own being. You right. don't have to go necessarily anywhere else. You just begin to examine, who am I? Where did I come from? And if you engage in that inner journey home, you recognize that timeless, nameless, boundless dimension that was the source of existence. And out of that, by becoming one with that, or by returning to that through a direct experience, you begin to unravel some of the reasons why it has existence and why it chose to manifest itself mm-hmm. as a physical universe, or really as the entire multiple dimensional, plane, layered existence, however many levels and layers you want to imagine.
Right.
There are probably that many and more. I don't know. I'm not a I don't have a map of all the levels of existence. And I think in some sense, what those layers and levels help us to realize whether or not there are subtler dimensions, other, you know, other worlds, other universes. What they help us to realize ultimately is that everything in manifested existence comes from the source, which is trying to realize itself through us and to manifest its qualities in an unmanifest form, in a manifested way. And how that shows up in our own lives is a very personal and deeply felt and deeply experienced way. It's through the loving relationships that we have with our spouses, our children, our parents, our coworkers. It's really about bringing that, the qualities and energies of our spirit into the physical, into and through our mm-hmm. through our bodily existence and in our relationships.
Yeah, I think certainly relationships are key, because I think it's only through relationships that we can see that mirror so clearly, and specifically the more intimate relationships. But I, you know, a lot of people, and certainly they talk about, you know, cults and groups and different religions, how they try and get you to sort of separate from your family, and that those are, you know, there are a lot of people that have conflicts with their parents, and certainly as a victim society, we tend to lay all of our blames of everything we went through as children on our parents, of course. And I think really the true essence of all of this is to learn how to accept everything that happened to us as divine, that we actually chose these experiences to move through them, and to, you know, to somehow learn to cultivate all of the relationships in our lives and not find a way to separate or segregate from them.
Yeah. A part of relating to your past and your experiences and your relationships in from that perspective really comes out of connecting with the truth, the yeah. absolute truth. In an absolute sense, sure, we've all, you know, we're all co-creators in our experience, but that, you know, that can also that's not an excuse for the, you know, the harm that's done
yeah.
here by yeah. people that are disconnected from the truth.
Right.
So that's a fine balancing act. Ultimately, we have to, you know, get out of victim mode and become victors.
mm-hmm.
But you know, it's not an easy process.
Yeah. Even the sense of victor means that there was somebody that you're winning, right? Like
yeah.
even that.
You're still caught up in the duality
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, you're still caught in the duality. Yeah.
yeah.
Let's go back to Global Awakening and how do we know? I mean, I guess it's only through experience that we can know the right teachers, or finding that discernment and your own unique path to where you want to go, to allow for your own journey to unfold. I mean, it's always unfolding. It's just, I guess it's the choices that we make, and I guess how we interpret those experiences. He's shaking his head, nodding yes.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me want to talk about, you know, how to choose a teacher.
Absolutely, let's do that.
Yeah, because
there are a lot of people out there that suggest, and David Hawkins is probably one of the first ones I actually read, but then, you know, I think there's been thousands of gurus that have also suggested this, but that you need, and you also write in your book, there is a part of us that needs to have someone in our lives that has reached a certain level to assist us to get to that next state. And, you know, some people use, you know, ascended masters as their, as who they pray to or who they measure to. But, I mean, it's much more difficult. I mean, this is a time where probably nowhere in history where there has been so many enlightened people on the planet at once.
Maybe. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, if you leave it to Hawkins, I think he's got an exact number, and it's only a handful. But I think just to speak in more general terms, there seems to be an increase in the number of people who are awakening to some of the eternal truths, the same truths that we've always known through our traditions, they're received through our spiritual traditions, but are able to translate and live them perhaps a little bit better. And that's a big perhaps. I don't know I don't certainly know for sure. My sense is that there is, again, a kind of a global awakening movement kind of emerging, and there does seem to be the potential that more souls are connecting with spirit and trying to, you know, translate what that means in a human life. But in terms of, just to go back to this idea of, you know, choosing a teacher or working with a teacher, you know, there's two things. In our culture, I think we're highly individualistic, or we're sort of conditioned socially to think in very individualistic ways, that, mm-hmm. you know, we're self-starters, you know, we do it on our own kind of thing. But, in reality, the people who are most successful are people who understand that you need others to help you. And the way that you do that is by helping others. By helping others, you get the help that you need. And so the purpose of a teacher really is, I think you alluded to it, is someone who's sort of covered the territory, has met some of the pitfalls and made some strides and successes. And you work with a teacher because they can help you grow potentially more than if you had tried to do it on your own. The people who, you know, and my own life, I have been sort of an independent seeker and realizer. I didn't really have a teacher, but I think I'm more the exception than the norm. For most people, and this is not to suggest that there aren't people who may be listening to the show, or that there are people out there who have made significant strides on their own, but for most people, in my experience so far, they would benefit from the help and the assistance and the guidance of a teacher who is really focused on them getting to realize who they are at the deepest dimension of being, and also not neglecting this personal dimension of life, not thinking that your spirituality or your enlightenment comes at the expense of having good relations with your parents and your children and your siblings and your friends. I mean, in my understanding, both of those are critical, and the real measure of one's, you know, enlightenment, to give it a name, is the way that they, you know, they get along with others. How does their life look?
Right. Yeah. I think it's really interesting, because I think this time is just a so unique time. But, you know, everybody who comes onto this planet that it has some healing capacity or has some teaching capacity, regardless of who you are and where you are, you will always find your students, or your students will always find you. And then again, this discernment issue about where this person is, or how much we learn from this person, and to the point of, you know, when the student can surpass the teacher, or when the student can realize, you know, the dynamics that are being played, so that they don't have to have this power struggle, or, you know, because I think everywhere along the way, I've done a lot of my own self-counseling, where I can get to the point where I can see, you know, my issues and understand my issues. And maybe it's through the extensive way that I have read, and, you know, I have this innate understanding of a lot of this information. But when it comes to, you know, learning certain techniques and tools and ways of being, you know, I have at times chosen teachers, and typically they have been teachers that I have realized after a certain point that I'm giving my power to. And I think there's part of this also in the collective unconscious of women in particular who pick male teachers, that there's this issue around that duality and around, you know, just the way women have had to do that in history for so long, or else it meant death. I mean, there's been this whole interesting dynamic as a woman coming in this life to work through certain issues with regarding my spirituality, specifically if I pick a male teacher.
Yeah, well, you know, it's part of what may be happening, you know, in the sense that, you know, you work with a teacher and then you feel that, you know, the teacher is no longer the right teacher for you. That may be true, but I've also experienced this as a teacher, that some people, rather than, and I'm not suggesting that this is the case for you, but it rings true in terms of the underlying dynamic that can happen when working with a teacher. Because part of what a teacher is trying to do is show you your patterns,
right?
And helping you to make the connection between your patterns and how they show up as the problems and difficulties in your life.
Yeah.
And often what happens is, because the ego, the mind part of the ego, or the self-preserving part of the personal self that, you know, doesn't necessarily want to admit that there's something wrong. it can in a very insidious way, and almost in a subconscious way, make you believe that the problem is not with you, that the problem is with the teacher.
Oh,
and
no,
I've seen this.
I'm
quite
very
a
good
bit
at recognizing, yeah, when the problem's with me. However, usually it ends up in a betrayal situation where that is a pattern that I have to work through, which it's usually by that time that I realize how much power I'd actually given the person that I went.
Right.
Oh,
and
again?
So then you have to take it back, and
yeah.
That's,
yeah,
always fun.
Yeah. Luckily it's only been a couple. However, yeah, it's a very interesting situation. But no, I completely understand what you're saying, and certainly our egos like to play interesting games with situations in how we grow. I mean, it's desire to maintain itself, I'm not 100% sure that our egos actually completely ever leave when we're on a physical planet, but such as this. But I there's a part of me that hopes that, you know, we certainly have a lot more, not necessarily control, but certainly a lot more awareness of the games and the issues that we, you know, come to this planet to work through.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to be careful because there aren't enough terms to really describe the subtleties of the inner journey, because, you know, we're throwing around the term ego in different,
yes,
ways, even in this conversation.
Let's talk about that then. let's talk about what they mean.
Well, I brought that up only to point out that as you engage in your own inner work and you begin to try to develop the discernment of understanding yourself, you start to realize how subtle it can be.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, it can be very obvious. You know, you're a jerk and you need to work on that. But then as you move through the layers of your own psychological and emotional programming that's below the conscious mind, that sits in the subconscious mind and throws itself up every time, you know, something, that process of beginning to understand all the different ways that those subconscious impulses, you know, can emerge in one's consciousness and influence one's behavior, one's thinking patterns, one's emotional reactions, that becomes a very potentially tangly and confusing process until you really begin to get good at examining yourself from the perspective of your true self, which is where the clarity comes from, which is where the wisdom comes from. Part of what a teacher does is helps to put you back in that so that you can separate the wheat from the chaff, to use an older Christian expression. But it's it becomes much more subtle the deeper you go, and eventually you begin to understand yourself so well that you have much more control over what the subconscious does,
right,
and how it impacts you.
Right. Well, I find at this point anyway in my evolution is that, you know, whenever I'm in a state where I'm not feeling joy or happiness or whatever that elusive term means, but, or when I'm in, you know, where a relationship conflict comes into my face, regardless of what type of relationship it is, then I know that it's mine. And I did a great interview with Tracy McBurney on the Ho'oponopono, which she has taken to, you know, a very deep level of understanding that, you know, anything that comes into her field, if somebody comes to her about something, then it's her issue to fix. And if something comes up, and so that is how I've been looking at the world of late and trying to, you know, find my own way within it, and knowing that, you know, pretty much everything that comes up is not necessarily the person in front of me, but that's just the mirror to help me understand that.
Well, the person could be the trigger. The person's own unacknowledged stuff,
yes,
is the trigger for your own unacknowledged,
yes,
stuff. And the discernment or using the mirror or the shadow work or the mirroring function is just a way to use your difficult experiences to examine
yourself.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that the other person is something that you've manifested. I think that's a new age concept.
Right.
You know, I mean, some people just need to be told where to go.
Okay, fair enough.
It's in order sometimes.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah. I guess it's our response and reaction to them that is our thing. And mm-hmm. whatever, you know, if they're just doing something that doesn't really bother you, then it's not your issue. But if they're doing something that clearly is in your face and making you start to get, I mean,
there's something there that needs to be looked at.
And then,
of course, then, you know, there is the underlying dynamic that, you know, we do attract sort of whatever or where or however we're vibrating. So whatever it is that we're sort of preoccupied with, there's an increased likelihood that we'll experience something similar. So if we're anxious, we'll probably, you know, encounter other anxious people.
Yeah.
Not everybody will be anxious, but somebody will kind of pop up, and that's
right.
Just the kind of there is a potential to then engage in that mirroring function, you know,
right,
to sort of say, oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
Whereas and it may not be the exact same level of anger or irritation,
exactly,
but it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that certainly comes up a lot, I think. I think it's just part of our own natural process of moving through things and understanding what part of it is yours and what part of it is theirs and what part of it is for us to learn. And I think it's a very interesting dance that we have to engage in to understand the whole complexity of where it is that we're at.
Mm-hmm. So I think in a functional relationship, with a teacher, that process is facilitated. And also, you know, if there is a community, then the people in the community are also using those opportunities to learn, to explore, and to discover themselves through different means and methods. But definitely part of the methods can be the mirroring function that goes on, that when it's done in a safe way, that can also lead to deeper levels of understanding.
Yeah.
So that, you know, this is also just to
full circle back to coming to the teacher part.
Yeah. Well, just to, you know, just to point out that there are benefits to working with a teacher and working in a community.
Well, yeah.
That it doesn't always have to be that we're doing it on our own.
But isn't it difficult to create a community without that shadow part coming engaging, without that piece that needs to be addressed. Like, because personally, I have been wanting to either create or be part of a type of community like that. But whenever there is a, in quotations, teacher involved, it typically results in a teacher creating the shadow side of that community that needs to be addressed, that all the things that we are working through kind of comes into our face. And the teacher tends to, and I don't want to say that all of them do, because certainly it's not necessarily the teacher, because you can think of big gurus that have, you know, thousands, if not millions of followers, and it's not the guru that is creating the problem, but it is then the hierarchy of the people that have been created to sort of work around to create that community that can be part of the problem. And that there's this whole dynamic that gets played out.
There's many dynamics, yeah. Even in what you're describing. But I mean, one thing is time tells all.
Yeah.
You know, a teacher can start out great and maybe not end up in such a great place. And that, and the reflection or the measure of their success is, this is the community that, they or create. The number of students that they've helped or hindered in terms of their students' or followers' progress. So, you know, a lot of people take a crack at being a teacher. It's the measure of time that shows how equipped. I met someone once who sort of looked at me and said, "Are you sure you got the chops for this job?"
Yeah.
I think so, but we'll see. Time will tell.
Right.
And I think it's something that you really have to look at over the course of decades. It's not, you know, somebody can have great progress because of an inspiration that emerges and they start to teach right away, but 5 years down the road, the inspiration is gone and maybe the community is fragmented because there's something that the teacher maybe hasn't looked at or hasn't worked on growing too and evolving.
Right.
And with and through the community. And just like any, you know, any, I think teachers get maybe are held under more scrutiny because they're supposed to be seen as somehow perfected and better and you know, finished products.
Right.
But I think as long as the teacher or the leader has enough integrity that they're willing to continue to learn and grow as they're helping and encouraging the growth of their students and also trying to manage the structure of whatever organization develops as a part of the work that they're doing, chances are over time, you know, things have a way of working themselves out as long as your heart is pure and you know, you're willing to learn.
Right.
And not think that you know you've stopped learning.
Right.
I think that's where you start to get into trouble as a teacher or as a human being engaged in any kind of endeavor.
And that's our biggest trap, I think, is that when we think we know it all and we stop growing ourselves. And we've seen it so many times in business, in everything, where you think you know this is what you want to teach, and if you don't move with the evolution of it, it gets stagnant. I think a lot of ancient texts out there have a wealth of knowledge that is, you know, incredible. But at the same time, we're not part of that period anymore. And I think things have to change. Like, I guess, you know, I'm very much from a very different place in that, you know, when it comes to a lot of the ancient Vedic texts where they talk about men and women having to be separate, and if you're going on a spiritual retreat, you should be in separate quarters, and you know, all of that stuff, that to me, I guess I come from too much of a very tantric and very goddess type energy, that is not how I feel that we grow the most. Segregating ourselves out, you know, just reinforces the dichotomy and the duality that we are trying to somehow bring together, yet we are still being forced to learn in a way that is segregated. And
at least in this life, there's never any absolutes. The absolute is beyond this life.
Right.
So I think there's really interesting work being done today by modern teachers,
yeah,
who are trying to work with tantric yogic techniques as a way of using the potential friction that can happen in a sexual romantic bond and union as a way for both people to grow. It's a huge subject.
Oh, and it's huge.
It is a huge subject, and it's kind of been Hollywoodized.
Oh, totally. It's westernized is westernized. What it's been. I mean, it's sure. been...
it's all about having great orgasms.
Sex. Yeah, it's not.
But the deeper understanding is at the heart of any tantric approach is essentially the recognition of non-duality.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's just the method and the approaches of that particular school or way... And, you know, is working with human coupling and
right.
sexuality and not renouncing it or rejecting it and not telling the practitioners, you're going to go to a monastery with all men and you're going to go to a monastery with all women and we'll just not deal with the emotional and sexual impulses because they're too bloody confusing.
And they are. However, they are also what make life interesting.
and continue.
Yes. Well, that too. Like, I don't know what China's doing. Seriously, what is China doing?
What do you mean?
Well, because they're limiting, you know,
I think
everybody
it's changed. I think it's changed. Well, they started out with the one-child policy, I think out of strict necessity. You're going to get me on a totally different
topic.
Have so much, I'm so fascinated by the Chinese. I was there for a while. My brother was studying in China to become an acupuncturist, so I visited
nice.
Him there. And I was just telling my wife the other day about this experience where... The city that we were living in decided that, or somebody had raised the issue that there was too much horn honking going on, and they put out a law at like 12 o'clock in the afternoon saying that tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. there's no more horn honking, and the next day at 6 a.m. there wasn't a horn honking in the entire city.
Wow!
There's something quite remarkable about the Chinese people to engage, you know, to just follow through with stuff.
Wow.
Like, you know, here I remember yeah. that when seatbelts were sort of the law became that you had to use a seatbelt, it took like about 5 years before people finally said, hey, this is a good idea.
No, it's true. We're such a rebellious any rule, and we
perhaps.
Test it. And then there's the Asian culture that, you know, follows rules in a much
good,
more...
Good or bad.
Exactly. Good or
yeah,
bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Sorry.
I thought I'd share that. I'm always fascinated
by them.
That's
very interesting. Yeah. Okay, so our show hopefully is going to give our listeners tips and techniques and ways to create a community, and maybe through the show creating a community that can, you know, be part of this global awakening, whether it's their own, whether they want to create others, whether, you know, it's part of this, but to create that sort of synergy to allow some of this change and transformation. I'll be a perfect person to interview you because I'm so not there, and it's so much my, you know, unique interest to achieve that. So I think we'll do a great show. I'll be very good at being able to test you or to, you know, to come up with great concepts of what I feel, you know, that probably go against everything you know, or maybe not.
Well,
hopefully.
Or just maybe just reflect what some of the listeners might
yeah.
be thinking about or wondering
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I'm usually really good at that.
if I could add this now.
Well, we've
got
lots of time.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't trying to hurry you off. We still have
about
17 minutes. So
all right.
We're good. But you do. Go ahead if you
well,
want
just
to.
In between, I mean, we're going to be meeting. We're going to be doing the show once a month. I think
right.
it's the first Monday of every month, and to sort of help create that community and to allow people to plug in different ways. One of the ways that I thought might be nice is to have an online forum.
Nice.
So that might be a way for listeners if they've, you know, they're listening to the show and you know, something that we've said has sort of inspired a question, that they could connect with us through the online forum and ask that question, and that can help to generate more of a continuity interest as well, but also continuity between the shows, and so that there's some interaction between shows.
That'd be great.
So we can maybe give out the website where I'll have that forum ready.
Great.
At the end of the show.
Great.
Okay.
That, I mean, that's perfect because we do, you know, encourage everybody to become, you know, part of the community and part of the listening, you know, has to do with offering their own information and how to make it work in the questions that they have, because that's how we all grow.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you think of, well, okay, let's look at your vision of what you see of Global Awakening and how you see your own piece of that coming to happen, to manifest.
Mm-hmm. It's a big question.
And you don't have to feel that you need to answer it completely, but...
Well, I think, it's time will tell. I'm definitely inspired and motivated by my own journey and what I've understood about the reason that we're here. One thing I do know with a certain amount of certainty is that the more people that really engage their own spiritual evolutionary process and try to become, through spiritual practice and through the understanding and the integration of spiritual teachings, correct or accurate or beneficial spiritual teachings, that to become in some sense a vessel for the infinite while you're here in the finite world of form, that the more people that do that and do it successfully, the more the potential for a global awakening to occur, the more that level of realization can then become much more available to more people. And there is some scientific proof to validate that this is how things work.
Right.
that patterns influence patterns.
Right.
Or that, you know, but in terms of how that will play out in time, only time will tell. I think that, you know, the idea of the 2012 phenomena, that there might be the significant shift that would occur where spontaneously everybody awakens is possible in theory, but in practice, I have no idea. I don't think anyone knows for sure. I think what we can say with some certainty that is that if enough people work towards stabilizing and living from the true depths of our being while engaged in a very personal human life and not just, you know, extricating oneself from life and meditating in a mountain. I mean, one might need to do that for a little while, but if you sort of come down from the mountain and engage the world, that you become in some small but significant way a catalyst for pushing the evolution of human consciousness towards the awakening that has always been the understanding of who and what we really are and what we're actually doing here and why we're here. I think in some very conventional terms, how that translates or what that looks like is just more of the good stuff in life. More, you know, more kindness in the world, more, you know, more generosity, more understanding, more compassion, more wisdom, all of the stuff that when we have moments of it, we're so fulfilled by it that we think, yes, that was a beautiful moment that happened today when, you know, that perfect stranger opened the door for me. Because on a soul level, we recognize that ultimately that's what we're here, but we're not always living from that, right, from that level.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting part of the process of evolving to get to that place of, you know, pure compassion and pure unconditional acceptance and love. I mean, it's what we all so desperately desire,
mm-hmm,
to have someone else see into us or acknowledge us or understand us. And I guess, you know, part of the only way of doing that is to being able to do it ourselves,
mm-hmm,
you know, to another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting dynamic that has to be played out. We all have to get to that level that, You know, because I think of myself as I've grown and who I was, you know, 20, 30 years ago and mm-hmm. who I am now. And it's very different. But even, you know, who I was 5 years ago to who I am now is a very different person. And the level of compassion and the level of understanding and acceptance towards others is huge. Towards myself, yeah, not so much. But towards others is there. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting how we can move through our processes and, you know, and not really even acknowledge the growth that we've done. Yet when we look back and think, you know, I had so much more anger and anxiety and at different times in my life, and then I can think back to now and bring it up and go, wow, you know, I've really done a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about this. I'm excited about the whole project. I'm excited about where it can go and how it can move forward. And yes, I interview a lot of people that, you know, have, I think we're all here with a unique aspect of what we're bringing to this planet. And I think, you know, the planet isn't whole unless we all get to express that unique aspect.
Absolutely. Isn't that true?
Yeah. Like I remember interviewing somebody who said, you know, there's over 6 billion people, and we all have the same knowledge, which is, you know, we all want to love and be loved. Yet we have over 6 billion different ways of what that looks like and what that means, because it's so unique to everyone. But it's an interesting time, because we all are seeing little pieces. And then, you know, I've been sort of doing this dating scene where, you know, I get to now see the other side of the world who's not been doing any of this stuff. And it's like, oh, you know, and I live a very sheltered life right now. It's been very quiet, and I've sort of created my own cocoon where I am only with people that are on this path and this journey. And I haven't been around a lot of people that, you know, have no idea what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, they've all sort of been part on this journey. So it's very interesting right now. It's to see that other side and to see the different levels that exist and to wonder, you know, at what point could that tipping point or that 100th monkey allow for these people to open up and see a whole different aspect that they're not even knowing is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I mean, I think this is where it comes in, because clearly there are people out there that if this were to happen and they were to just just someday wake up,
it would be too shocking. It'd rock their world and everybody would go insane and become cannibals.
Maybe. Not cannibals, but something.
Well, that was my own little twisted addition there.
But I think it would be very interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. I think part of what will be our saving grace is to sort of really move beyond the, you know, the problem of thinking in such extreme opposites, you know.
Right.
I mean, I think about, you know, the 2012 phenomena, and it's so either or. At
yes.
least the way it's presented. I don't, yeah. you know, and so I sort of try to temper that with the idea that, you know, the degree of the shift will be the degree of the shift that happens. and the, you know, if you look at where humanity is going, what global awakening represents is just the potential to move forward with more conscious awareness in part. I mean, certainly we have lots of problems as a planet that we have to solve.
Oh, so
you know?
Many.
And the degree to which we're able to do that in a more conscious way, will what that would look like is whether or not, you know, we're going to, you know, to take the issue of, say, global warming, you know, if we cooperate as nations and as a global village to solve the problem, that will look a whole lot different than if, you know, a few people take the charge and have to, you know, force the people that aren't willing to engage in that process in a collaborative way.
Mm-hmm.
Then that looks the way it'll look, that, you know, there'll be a lot of the underhanded stuff that will have to take place in order to force those who don't want to change to change.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we could get into a whole discussion about global warming and whether that indeed is a process. But I do agree that what we're doing to the planet has to change. And we have to find that sacredness back. And we have to find the way that we are all connected, in the way that everything is connected, the way the trees and the planet, like the, you know, the plants and the animals and the people. And, you know,
that's
we
right.
are just a small piece of this planet, and we are thinking that we are everything on this planet, and we're not. You know, we're missing this integral. I mean, that's what I love about Avatar, because it showed this piece that we're not even taking for granted. We just don't understand
the sacredness of life.
Yeah
and our I mean, I don't know. Is it true? I think that in some sense, people, at least in moments, understand that life is sacred, but we're part of a system that's commercially driven to mm-hmm. exploit the planet for material gain.
Yeah.
I think most people kind of acknowledge that. That may have just, you know, emerged, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, people
yeah.
were like, you can keep pulling as much oil out of the ground as you want and burning, it's not going to change a thing. But I think there is some, you know, there is some proof that we probably have to, you know, address the way that we're, you know, using energy and getting energy. But we're part of a system that's so monumentally huge and complex that,
yes,
that the way to change it may not be so easy.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we can't
make changes.
We can't make changes, and that we shouldn't. That we just throw our hands up and say, well, we're just going to, you know, run this material engine
yes.
until the whole thing blows up and that's that. I mean, I don't think we will as a species.
Right.
It's just a matter of how long we wait.
Right.
And the longer we wait, obviously, the more creative we're going to have to be and the more drastic we're going to have to be to make the changes to save the biosphere,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah. Okay, well, we can maybe talk about that another time, but certainly it is, you know, something we have to look at. So tell us about what's coming up and different things, and obviously this forum that you're going to have.
So for the forum, if there are listeners that have some questions, they can visit globalawakeninginaction.org and just sign up to the site, and you'll see the message board, and you can just post your questions, and there are other members already on the site who will probably participate in the discussion, and I'll be there to moderate it.
Nice.
So that's there. There's two other things. One, I'm working with a woman named Eva Karpati, who has a paper called Good News Toronto. I don't know if anybody in the community has seen the paper. But we're working together to create a kindness. We've already created or started a kindness campaign. And the idea is just to, you know, to bring more kindness to Toronto. And not as an idea, but, you know, we're actually, engaging the city and trying to raise the idea that, you know, we could stand to be a little kinder with each other. So one of the things that we're doing is a kindness paves day, and we're actually going to assemble and hit the streets as a sort of a community of kindness campaigners and spend 2 hours just doing as many kindness activities as we can, and you know, maybe shock some people out of their out of their
I'm sure it'll shock a lot of people.
So if people are interested in that, they can go to Facebook and just Facebook Kindness Pays, and
nice.
The details will be there about when, where, and how it's going to happen. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that I'm offering free 30-minute soul path sessions.
Nice.
for the people who know me beyond the listenership, but the people from my community who are listening in know I can be hard to track down. But for the next 6 months, for sure, I'm going to be doing a lot more one-on-one coaching, spiritual direction sort of work. And so if people are interested, there's absolutely no commitment to purchase anything. I'm just offering this as a free opportunity to
connect with you,
connect with me, and just, you know, you might be struggling with a problem or just have, you know, a goal that you'd like to reach and want someone to bounce those ideas off and develop a plan about some next steps. So if you're interested in that, you can go to my website, stephendemico.com, and right on the homepage, you'll see it's right there about how to connect with me to set up a free 30-minute soul path session.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I look forward to this, Stephen. I think this is going to be a really interesting show, and I think we're going to do some great work. So it's kind of nice to have a consistency with someone who's really trying to develop something. So I'm excited about this.
Same here. Thank you again. All right.
All right. So it'll be, this is August, so it'll be September, which is our next class, our next show. So tune in and
enjoy the rest of the summer.
There you go.